What's good, internet, and welcome to session 8 of Super GG Radio, where friends chat about video games and video game adjacent stuff. I'm your host, Alex Arona, and with me this week is our resident dad o'war, Joel DeWitt. Hey, Joel.
Boy. Boy, I'm real close to being able to cosplay as Kratos. I'm already bald, bearded, and pale. I just need some red paint and let the beard grow out a bit. And, maybe turn 20 pounds of fat into muscle. Easy peasy, right?
I think you can do it. It seems obtainable. This week, haphazardly replacing your bad PSN name before playing the newest Ubi titles in news. And the backlog blog will have some tactical octopus espionage action, peppered with putting on your Nordic war god face. But first, like every week, we start with our early adopter segment where Joel and I dabble in demos, betas, alphas, or discuss new releases we couldn't wait to jump into. Without further ado, let's get started. This week in the early adopter segment, I picked up Elder Scrolls Blades for mobile. This is set to release in 2019, but they don't have an official date as of yet. Have you taken a look at this at all, Joel?
Absolutely not.
Okay. Well, as far as a mobile game is concerned, you see a lot of the trappings, but if you haven't seen it, it looks like Oblivion-style graphics on your phone, which is pretty impressive if you ask me.
I think that's a fair standard to be set towards, yeah.
Yeah, if you can get Oblivion looking on your phone, it's pretty fun. But the way it works is tap to move. It's an adventure game just like any other, you know, Skyrim game where someone comes up to you. There's a lot of dialogue about quests. You choose a prompt and you move forward with their quest. The tricky part is being on your phone. When you tap the screen, it's tap to attack. There's a shield icon you touch to bring up your shield. And of course, you get magic abilities via skill trees or regular abilities. And you can, they're on the screen as well as button prompts that you touch with your hand. There's a lot going on there. There's a lot to make it feel like an Elder Scrolls game. Then you throw in, of course, the free-to-play trappings.
Is it turn-based combat or is it just like the PC counterparts?
Just like PC counterparts, there are enemies who are dodging and weaving, and when you get into a combat scenario, it automatically zooms into a person-to-person. You know, you don't see your character, but they pretty much square off right in front of you. And so when they dodge, you have to time your button, your screen taps to attack them at the right time or else they'll dodge out, and you can use your shield to block their attacks. If you did it at the right time, just at the point of where they're going to hit you, it'll knock them back, giving a sort of parry.
So it's a rhythm game.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. Yeah, and it's a little bit, you could see they cut corners, there's no going to a quest area. As soon as you accept a quest, you go into a menu, you select the quest, and it auto-teleports you to the dungeon, the castle, the forest, where the quest will be. Kill this many of these enemies, or go save these villagers.
One of my problems I've had with Elder Scrolls games in my time with them is that world travel, and that's going to sound sacrilegious to anybody who actually likes those, but I don't find the experience of travel the open world particularly fun, or exploring and finding new venues really all that exciting. So surprisingly enough, the way they've pared that down actually might appeal to me a little bit.
Yeah, it's really a boiled down experience without a lot of the riffraff, which again, some people, like you said, some people prefer the world and being able to find these nooks and crannies, and here it's pretty much cookie cutter. But if you like that gameplay, you like those skill trees, you like the look, you know what I mean? It's really about that aesthetic, that Elder Scrolls aesthetic, having the screen. I will say in my experience, I spent, as per any Bethesda game, I spent about a good 20 minutes picking my character and wanting to look just right. And of course, first person, you're never going to see that guy again. Except for when you're putting on gear and the menu screen and whatnot, which they have. They have gear and armor and weapons, but you didn't even pay attention to it.
I fall for that trap pretty often, and especially if it's something that is modifiable enough to where you can really get strange with it, like a really crooked out forehead or a big old Dumbo ears and weird shit like that.
Yeah, it's exactly it. My guy's a lizard man, which is a species in the Elder Scrolls world. It's very common. The way it started, though, is the story conceit. You just wander into this town that has been decimated, and your job is to rebuild it by going and doing these quests, going and gathering wood, going rescuing villagers, really bringing back the town, as it were. Then you start to see the trappings come in, where you have all the materials, now you build the blacksmith. But to build the blacksmith, takes an hour. So you have to wait, or you can spend real world gems to, of course, speed it up, which costs money.
So those are the hooks for the mobile free to play type experience that they're peddling.
Yes. And that also goes with loot that you find in dungeons. You will find treasure chests. So far, the tiers are common, silver, gold, and platinum, each one with an ascending timer. The silver being 3 hours, gold being 6 hours, and I assume platinum is 9. I haven't played. I've dabbled. I haven't gone into deep, like I'm completing the town. I've gone about 5 hours into it, and I've only seen silver and gold. But those are pretty long timers, too.
Okay, and have you felt like you were being gated particularly hard by not engaging in that?
No, I don't feel like I've been gated, though I do find some couple issues here and there. Specifically, if I'm building a building or if I'm opening a chest, I click on the chest and it says it'll be done in 3 hours. But if I have another chest or I can build another building, I can't start those timers until the first timer is completed.
Okay, and when it comes to the missions themselves, does it feel like an MMO? Is it that the kind of mission structure that it is, where it's like, go to this zone, collect 10 wood, bring it back to the quest keeper, or kill 10 of these elves and come back to the quest keeper?
Yes, it is, and the maps are fairly linear, so when it is go kill 10 elves or whatever it would be, you go into a dungeon and you're walking about in a dungeon. There's a path to the left and then you'll hook to the right, and it's just pretty much one straight path. Though, interestingly enough, you'll find hidden switches, which everything that you can interact with is highlighted, so if you're just not paying attention. But you'll see a highlighted panel on the wall. If you touch it, it'll open up and you'll get a secret with a chest. And when you start the quest, it'll actually say there are 2 secrets in this area. So you kind of know what to keep in the back of your mind while you're progressing. And so when I first started the game, I actually kind of felt motion sick because it is a tap the floor to move. Some people said that there is an on-screen analog, you know, like an analog stick, the virtual analog stick they put on a lot of these games.
Right.
For some reason, I couldn't get mine to work on the iPhone X. But the tap to screen worked fairly well, but when you drag to spin the camera, I got a little dizzy. So that is a warning to all you playing.
Huh. I haven't experienced much with motion sickness before, so I'm kind of curious about how that might affect me. I haven't done VR either, so I don't have much experience with the things that would. But one other question I had was, I know this is the beta, right?
Yes.
So probably going to be limited content in regards to this, but how much story is there actually involved as you progress through the missions?
Well, it depends how much you really want to engage with that kind of content. There's a really deep backstory referencing things in the previous Elder Scrolls games. There's conversations. This is a town you're rebuilding. There's something behind how the town got decimated in the first place. It's really an environmental storytelling, or just these really deep, rich conversations that you have to listen to and go through and page through all this text to get the info of what happened. I didn't engage as far as I could have. So at that point, I just was like, okay, I understand the gist of it. So I'd say that there is a good amount of story there, and I think that a lot can be gleaned further.
Okay, because I know that from my limited experience that a lot of the Elder Scrolls stuff has pretty rich lore and history and narratives, threads throughout the whole game. And understanding it's a mobile title, so that means there's going to be limitations to that somewhat. But I imagine that'd be something that Bethesda fans would really be interested to see in something like this.
Yeah. I think there will be more of it as the game progresses. As it is a beta, I saw at least 2 updates. They're planning on more, adjusting those timers. I think there's a lot of online complaints about the length of those timers for those chests, as well as the world building and the amount of materials needed to craft and finish these quests. I will also say that when I was playing, I unlocked an unlimited dungeon mode, where it's just you start in the dungeon and you just go until you die and just go as long as you can. But I've heard some people talk about the fact that the cost to repair your gear after death ends up being more than the loot you obtain from it. And that gets carried over into the main game, but currently right now it isn't worth it. So it's something that'll probably get updated as they go. I can see a lot of things changing for this game, and I can see it being something that you be like, okay, I'm really excited to get into this, and I think this is worth my time to go in, play for 10 minutes completing a quest, shut it down, move on with your day. Especially the fact that they auto-teleport you to these areas, and it's pretty much, again, like I said, a linear path. I feel comfortable just like, okay, 10 minutes, let's just knock something out while I'm waiting in line at the grocery store or something like that. that, you know what I mean?
Right, the hope would be that it's something where if you don't pay any money, you can still progress, even though it might be a little bit limited, rather than actually backtracking in progress after you've gone through something. And then, of course, with the way the pricing model works, if you pay, you get to progress further and quicker. But since it's a beta, hopefully that's something that they figure out and iron out to make it a little more smooth when it's live.
Definitely. Definitely. I always keep my options open. I feel comfortable when I take the when I test these games and I try them out and feel like, okay, well, at least this can change. This can be adjusted. It's not out yet. The one thing I did notice was I did see a difficulty spike jump where I feel like the game could have said, oh, maybe if you spent some gems, you could level up faster. It didn't throw it in my face, but it went from easy, 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 almost like tutorial to here's the real game. Wow, these guys are taking off half my health with one hit.
Sort of like a nudge, nudge. Maybe now this is the time to...
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know how much more I'm going to play. I do recommend anybody trying this out, especially considering that the beta has recently just went open for everybody. I've been playing it for about a month, so.
Okay.
Awesome. The other announcement that came out about a week ago from Take-Two when they announced Borderlands 3 was they announced Risk of Rain 2 came to Steam. Is it? It's not Greenlight anymore, is it?
It's called, I think it's just Early Access.
Early Access, yeah. Yes. Risk of Rain 2 came to Early Access for Steam. So when you purchase a copy for $20, it comes with two copies so you and a friend can play, because Risk of Rain 2 went multiplayer.
Yeah, this seemed like an easy choice to try and dive in face first and just give it a go. I don't know about you, but I didn't have any experience with Risk of Rain as a series before now.
I actually purchased Risk of Rain 1 right before this just because I wanted to see the difference between them. And oh boy, is it such a cool difference between the first one and the second one, because the ideas are so much the same and the enemies are so much the same, just fully rendered in a almost cell shaded looking 3D world. It's just such a cool, it's like Mario from Mario to Mario 64, you know what I mean? It's like this cool direct analog.
Right, so my time with Risk of Rain, it's basically kind of a level-by-level survival where you're dropped on a terrain, and then there are different chests and items littered across the world, and as you start playing, you're set with a difficulty, and then mobs of enemies will come forward to you, various different kinds of monsters, and as you shoot them down, you get experience and currency, and you use that currency to unlock the chests, which usually have some sort of upgrade to your tool set. Like, it'll be enemies drop health orbs, or you shooting people will have a chance of giving bleed damage on top of it, or little kind of robots that'll follow you and heal you over time. And it's cumulative, so as you keep on collecting things, it all stacks on top of each other, and so over time you'll become this sort of beastly being as you're mowing down the enemies.
Now, the real cool conceit of the game is that as you're playing, there's this constant timer that's ticking down from that the game is currently in easy and slowly will become progressively harder the longer you play. And you are in one full map that has a teleporter, which is just looks like two red spikes. Once you find them, you have to activate them, which then sets a timer for 90 seconds. And in that 90 seconds, you will just be bombarded by dozens and dozens of enemies and one giant boss that is randomized. So you're kind of wagering, how much time do I want to level up and get these items and get better at the game in this map before I start the timer to start the teleporter, while also managing the difficulty timer that's constantly ticking down at the top right corner.
Right, it's kind of a treadmill you have to climb, and also kind of meter out the difference between you progressing and the difficulty that's ramping up, because if you sort of aimlessly wander across the world and not collect upgrades and power-ups, the enemies are going to progressively get bigger and stronger and harder, while you're going to be lagging behind on that treadmill. So it's really a value proposition you have to figure out. And it's something that actually my first few playthroughs I played solo and didn't understand. So I would only last 1 or 2 minutes before just getting obliterated without finding any objectives.
And why I said it was so cool to see 1 versus 2, because the first Risk of Rain looked like Mario 1 for the NES. It was you on this tiny map, and the map almost looks like the Donkey Kong level, the very first Donkey Kong game, where it's just these platforms that you can climb across and move across in these land masses. And you have a couple of moves that are based on the character you choose. You start out with only one character, and you have these four moves that are part of a skill set, and you are just trying to find the teleporter and killing all these enemies. Now with Risk of Rain 2, it looks 3D. It looks almost like, again, very similar to Mario 64 in almost a cel-shaded look. And it's a lot more fun, a lot like floaty jumps. The main character from the first game is actually back as your main character in the second game, so you have the same moveset, but now again, fully 3D and realized. And it being a roguelike, it's fun to be able to run through these different levels. You try to find the teleporter, you teleport out, now you're on a new level, got to do it all over again. Now, with your friends. Multiplayer.
And as someone who's never played the first one, I have a real hard time trying to conceptualize what that would even be in 2D. So in 3D, in Risk of Rain 2, it's like any sort of behind-the-back third-person shooter, and you're working within a 3D range of motion, and there are flying enemies, and there are ground enemies, and it's all about mob control and management as you work through trying to progress and upgrade and get through to the teleporter. But it must really change the feel of the game in some ways for it to be on a flat 2D space with these constrained levels, whereas in this game, Risk of Rain 2, everything is pretty open.
And it also makes it a little bit easier to find that teleporter. I know that we played the other day and I streamed a little bit of it, and when we were trying to find that teleporter, we could not find the teleporter to save our life in this full 3D world that has now a level of elevation. You're climbing these ridges and finding every nook and cranny. When you're playing the first one, flat 2D plane, that you can kind of see everything just by like panning out a little bit, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and it should be important to bring the distinction here that multiplayer, it is four player matchups that you go through, and in my time with it with you, I found that if you sort of deviated from the rest of the group, you were really tinkering and toying with getting slaughtered outside of your own zone of exploration, you know? So there's really just the sense that if you have to stick together, you have to team up, otherwise you're going to split off, get overwhelmed, and die. And in that time, actually what happened was I was alone, and then all of a sudden I realized that I only saw one other player active on the map, and I followed towards them and saw you texting me at the bottom of the screen saying, we have to find the teleporter, and it even took me a few minutes after that to figure out that, oh shit, you actually got... you died. I need to figure out where this thing is so everybody could respawn and we could move on.
Yeah, and being a rogue, like, you get to keep your upgrades as you go into the next level, though all the money you accumulated gets put into your experience pool. You can level up from there. And then you start over with your four friends on this new map. Same conceit, and the difficulty meter has remained where it was at the last map. So, you're still playing to this point of, I need to take the time to level and get items, but I also need to not take enough time that the game doesn't get progressively harder.
Exactly.
It's really a lot of fun. I think that it's got a lot of places to go. In Risk of Rain 1, there was an end game with a boss, and from what I'm told, currently this beta doesn't have any kind of bosses, so it's currently an infinite, you know, just an infinite loop of you going through in every single map. So I think that if they add the end game, they have more characters to choose from, which I think are unlockable currently, but I don't know if they have them all in there yet. I don't know about our different modes or anything like that. I think if they add some different modes and some new characters, I think this could be a good next step for that game.
Absolutely, and I'll even say with it being an early access, in spite of some of the repetitious nature of the enemy types and the gameplay loop itself, the hook is engaging enough to where it's something you could easily just decide to jump in and play 15 minutes of in a round or two, depending on how you do, and then pop back out until you feel like doing it again. It works really well if you limit yourself to that.
And also, it works really well in the way that you can play around. Play a half an hour, 20 minutes, whatever you want, and then feel satisfied as I learned something, I made progress, I tried again. And it was so cool watching you just all of a sudden hit that light bulb where you're like, oh, okay, I have to do this and that and move this way and avoid these guys. And I remember you telling me, like, I don't think this game is for me. And then the light bulb clicked when we were playing, and it was great to watch. Because once I died, I panned to your camera and I was watching you play, and I saw you playing like a pro.
Yeah, well, that's absolutely true. Because the first two times, like I said, I kind of floundered pretty quick. And I didn't feel like there was anything wrong with the game. I knew it was something wrong with my understanding of how you play it. And it seemed kind of daunting at the time, because when I was playing, I very much was not aggressively fighting off enemies. I was picking and choosing which ones that I killed off in order to try to clear a narrow path for me to try to explore. And that's not the way you're going to want to play this, unless you really want to just get killed off quickly. You have to engage with the enemies as much as possible to accumulate the money and experience and jump on those chests to get the upgrades as quick as possible. Now, did you see any of the, are they called totems around the world?
I did.
Okay.
I did see some.
So those are weird modifiers, and those are actually negative ones, where it's like you can pay money and then it'll slash half your health off or affect your damage output. Or some of them will even just like spawn a whole litany of enemies around you if you engage in it.
Cool.
Yeah, so that,
so it gives you so another variability.
Right, it's sort of a timed, limited time difficulty modifier.
Modifier. Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. And overall, it the game feels well put together. It's interesting that they're shooting for 2020 release when this is so well put together already. And at the press conference when they announced this, it was just like, it's ready to go and you can play it today. And everyone was pretty surprised and really excited. But 2020, this feels almost done already.
I imagine there's probably some behind the scenes work to be done. When I was playing, I noticed a decent amount of sort of stuttering when it got into the really hectic parts of a map. And to what you pointed out earlier, the enemy types are limited, the power-up types seem a little limited too, and some of the environments even get kind of samey and undefined in a way that seems bare bones at times too. So I could see potential for them feeling like it's a good core experience. Now we need to shore this up and expand on what's actually offered in the package.
Yeah, I think that the enemy types being limited and the environments being limited almost is a point of failure to the first game, because the first game was such a small thing. And so when they made the second one, they probably just said, okay, well, let's make the new one, the first game, make it 3D. And then now let's optimize. Let's make it, let's expand. You know what I mean? Having just Risk of Rain 1 3D is good. Now let's expand and make it better. And if they do, within now and 2020, the release, it could be, again, like I said, a really good next step.
Yeah, Risk of Rain 3 in Smell-O-Vision.
Or fully realistic.
Photorealistic models.
That would be super creepy and super weird, and I would be all about that.
Think about like those renderings of Mario with realistic face and like pores and bags under his eyes.
Hey man, did you see those close-up shots of Mario Odyssey where you could see every single hair in his mustache and those skin pores? It was weird.
Yeah, they're borderline getting there.
Mm-hmm. But with that, it was a good week for new games. Let's take a short break and we'll be right back. And we're back with news. Although this week was relatively quiet, there were a few noteworthy topics to touch on. Why don't we start off with our friends at Ubisoft? Joel, did you see the news about Assassin's Creed Vikings?
Yeah, don't care.
Same. But what the good thing that came out of this was Watch Dogs 3 London. I'm so hyped. Did you hear how this leaked?
No, I don't know much of anything about this.
An update was released that patched into Watch Dogs 2, which is a weird time to patch Watch Dogs 2, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the patch now, what it did is it altered the ending to Watch Dogs 2, where now they make reference to something happening in Brixton in London.
Huh. Yeah, that reminds me of, did you ever play Portal 1 and 2?
Yes, I did.
Okay. I guess mild spoilers to anybody who hasn't. Back before...
Spoilers for what? How old is that game?
Yeah, just in case.
Yeah.
So Portal, when Portal 2 was about to come out, Valve actually patched Portal 1. And if you recall correctly, at the end of Portal 1, it's you escaping from Aperture and you sort of come to a screen of like lying on the ground outside of a parking lot and some like fencing and buildings and stuff. So they patched it, and at the end of that, they actually extend the end of the outro to showing you being dragged back in.
So the dragged back in part wasn't initially in it?
No. Initially, it just ended on a fade in to that screen of you know, the first person view of lying on the ground on like a parking lot floor or something like that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, see, I played those games way too late and I played them back to back.
Yeah, but I mean, it's kind of a neat trick you can kind of pull to retroactively change the end of something to tie in with that.
Well, with games always being online, you know, patching them and stuff like that, you couldn't do that with a Sega Genesis cart, except for you would just release an updated cart, you know what I mean?
That you could plug. But on top of the earlier cart to add Knuckles. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But with this, at least they can just patch and change these things out. That's where you get games that have, you know, they remove songs and stuff like that due to licensing rights being up and stuff like that.
Yeah, I know GTA games had issues with that in the past.
Yeah, exactly. But Watch Dogs 3 in London, I'm pretty pumped about that. I wonder how long it is before you tag Big Ben like you did the Golden Gate Bridge into.
I do not know enough about this series to comment. It's something that I've watched from afar and have dabbled in the second one and I'm curious enough, but most of the Ubisoft games outside of something like Rainbow Six, I don't feel good playing it. It just doesn't have the right feeling to the movement in the world, and I don't get far enough to get used to it.
I have found that's kind of how you have to do it. You force yourself into it. If you get yourself past the 2-3 hour mark, you're in it, you feel comfortable and you're ready to go. You got used to the kind of wonky controls and the little bit of unintuitive, oh my god, you ran into a wall and tried to run up it instead of turn left, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I understand.
But there was a as I was referring to before, a really funny quest where you had to go and tag these spots with your mark in Watch Dogs 2. And it culminated with you going on the Golden Gate Bridge and the really tall archway. You had to go up archway by archway because it's like 4 spots in this giant archway on the Golden Gate Bridge. And you had to go to one, put a tag, like you just paint this giant, you know, piece of paper like all over it. You know, you paper mache this big marking on it. Mm-hmm. Then you'd go to the next floor, do it again, go to the next floor, do it again. And you're going up the Golden Gate Bridge on this archway and you're making this really big image with this like really stupid corny catchphrase. And all in all, it was like a really funny thing to do. And then they pan out, of course, and you're just sitting there hanging out with your giant big corny Golden Gate Bridge. But you know, I liked it, and it was a fun thing to do and to see. And like, again, I'm like, oh yeah, glad they went there, because that's real silly.
Yeah, if there's anything I feel like I'm missing by not playing these, it's those bizarre set pieces or crazy scenarios they sometimes drum up throughout the story.
Right, so it said create on one, destroy on another, rebuild on another, and then I can't see what the third one said, but again, it was all good fun, and it made me feel kind of cool. But you know, you could, in London, you can hack the tube, you know, the subway system.
Oh, what is that called?
I think they just call it the tube.
Okay. Fair enough.
And London's already known for having CCTVs everywhere.
Oh yeah, there's kind of a surveillance state in some ways.
Yeah, and you can at least avoid guns, because they don't, I think it's pretty much outlawed there. That's why all of their cops just carry the clubs. Mm-hmm. So you never really used guns in Watch Dogs 2 anyways. So it was more of a Watch Dogs 1 thing. So now you can just not have it.
Yeah, the little bit I remember from the 2 I played, it was you were engaging more in the hacking mechanic than you were actual gunplay. And actually, when you had to resort to a gun, you often felt kind of disadvantaged, because it just didn't feel great to shoot. And your best tools were modifying stuff in the environment to set traps for enemies.
Exactly. And I think the only one that was really helpful was the, you had a stun gun that would knock them out.
Right.
So from a distance, you can stealth some, knock somebody out, and then not have to worry about them later. So I'm excited for Watch Dogs 3. Should be a good time. I think hopefully it'll be an E3. I think it'll be an E3 announcement, only because they're already done with the Assassin's Creed, right? Where there's not going to be a new one next year. They're doing it every other year, right?
From what I read, I thought they were sort of trying to span it out to 2-year intervals instead of an annual franchise. Yeah.
Exactly. So this one would have to be a Watch Dogs year, and I can't be more excited.
Yeah, by the time this one comes out, maybe I'll play the second one.
Exactly. Now, Joel, you can change your name on PSN.
Yeah, you can, with some pretty big caveats. Number one, it's not going to work retroactively with the PlayStation Vita or PlayStation 3. Mm-hmm. And also, apparently, it can affect trophy integration and a lot of other features for current PlayStation 4 games.
Do you know which ones, or does it? I'm sure there's a list somewhere.
Right? I believe there is a list. Admittedly, I didn't have time to go look it up, but I think even stuff like I remember reading what's that shooter on PlayStation exclusives?
Oh, there's quite a few, but there's some limitations to some shooters other games.
It's the PlayStation 4. It's a PlayStation exclusive series that they touted a PlayStation 4 version when its system first came out. It wasn't Resistance. It was the other one.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. That is the... Oh, man. It's like the fourth one, though, right?
Right, yeah. We'll let somebody correct us later about that. But yeah. Like stuff like that, and it's kind of strange to me that current-gen stuff's affected by this. It doesn't surprise me about PlayStation 3 and Vita. I remember reading back about the Xbox Live service on the original Xbox, about how the reason they had to close down that service is because they wanted to expand the service for Xbox 360 and beyond, but there were limitations to the way that they handled the user data for the original Xbox Live that limited their ability to do stuff like add your total friends count that you can have and other features. But it seems really strange to me that the tendrils were so deep in the way Sony handled their stuff that even by offering this change, you still have this kind of weird gray area of what will work and what won't if you make the change.
I think that's got to be down to the code level at that point, right?
That or like database management. I'm not sure if there's some situation where they hobble together like database after database and sort of daisy chain them just to sort of make a band-aid solution, and now they're sort of just tangled up in each other in a way that'd be really hard to untangle. But it's tough to tell. I mean, Sony's never going to talk about it. And unless we get some enterprising people to get people to talk for an article or a documentary of some type, we're probably never going to really know.
Oh, and the game was Killzone.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go. I figured it out.
Unremarkable name. Made sense.
Are they gonna charge for this? Or is the price? Is there a price to attach to it?
First one's free. I'm gonna say they charge $8.99 for any one after that. But they're offering a first free one. It's free to undo your embarrassing youthful choice for a name.
Bong Boner Bro 42069 XXX.
Swag.
Swag. That's cool. I picked mine wisely, but of course I didn't get into the PlayStation ecosystem until like super late into PS3, so I never had an embarrassing name. I have the same tag that I've had for everything.
You know how I picked my name?
How's that?
So back in college when we played World of Warcraft and we needed to create names for every character that you create. So I just really had a hard time choosing a name. I didn't want to choose any sort of pseudo-serious one because I wasn't taking the experience seriously. And I came up with it. I was like, well, Lemonade, that kind of sounds like you could put LOL in it in the front.
How dare you not take World of Warcraft seriously?
And then, let's see, the other ones I had were Lolar Coaster.
That's pretty good.
I think I had one that I called Zombie Charlton Heston. And I
remember that
one.
Yeah,
and because I created a macro that made me spam from my cold dead hands every couple seconds, and he was a undead character. I think that was shortly after he died, too. Very poor taste.
I thought that one got reported at some point or something like that.
No, I think Lolacost was the one that got reported.
There it is. Yeah. There it is.
No, I didn't say it was appropriate. I just said I did it.
No, I like it. It was good. It was good at the time.
Yeah.
You getting banned is pretty funny, too.
Yeah, and poor taste. I wouldn't do it again. But Lulminate, I feel good about. Yeah.
It's good that you stuck with it.
Yeah.
So, like we said, that's a short news week. Short and sweet. Time for a quick break, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll be back with the Backlog Blog and some listener emails. It's time for the Backlog Log, where we discuss games in our library that we brought back out and gave some love to. This week we will start with Octodad. I played Octodad Deadliest Catch.
Nobody suspects a thing.
Oh my god, that theme song. There's a theme song, you never hear it until the end, and it is it sounds like a 1950s surf tune, and the song is Octodad, Nobody Suspects a Thing. It's really brilliant. It's on Spotify. It's on Spotify. I found it.
I'm going to need to look that up now and save it to my phone. It is so bizarre and weird and delightful.
I want to start this as I'm starting to work into this series with my friends and my wife that this is an Alex Arona unusual multiplayer game, because I find these games that are very specifically single player and throwing it to 3-4 people and coming out with a really great time. The conceit of this game is that you are an octopus who is attempting very, very well, I might add, to dress up like a human and make everybody think that he's human, despite him talking in bubbles. It sounds like bubbles. It's like blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, gibberish.
Mm-hmm, and gibberish. And the gameplay is very like QWOP, like QWOP style, where 4 buttons to control 4 different limbs, and you are trying to move this character around very much like an I Am Bread or just something just very silly and ridiculous to control these limbs individually. And you go from these scenarios in the story trying to act normal.
Now, I haven't played this since probably the PlayStation 4 came out when I got it there. If I remember right, part of the levels are you completing pretty mundane tasks in like a supermarket or somewhere else at the aquarium. And there's sort of a meter in the corner, right?
Yeah, at the very bottom, and that fills the more you cause a mess or cause trouble when people are looking at you.
Right, so basically, if you're playing effectively, Octodad will still have this weird kind of jaunt as he's going along, but the meter will fill up more and more if you're kind of fumbling around, creating a mess and jumping into stuff or running into different people. And then if it goes past that meter, it's the fail state.
Yeah, it is just oozing with charm. He's got a wife, 2 kids. It's just super wholesome. He just wants to go about his day. He wants to mow the lawn. He wants to go to the supermarket with his family. And it's like you're playing with these. And the way I played it was I had my friend Steve over. He had an Xbox controller and I had my mouse. And it was playing off of my PC to my monitor. And sadly, it doesn't give you a 2-button, 2-button split. It only gives you 1 button for the mouse and 3 buttons on the controller.
Oh, no.
But it was still enough. Like, well, they color the limbs, so the 3 limbs were red for him and my limb was blue, so it was perfectly adequate to a situation where he would walk us over to a place and I would use my 1 limb to grab something, move it, unlock a door, do that kind of thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so he was gracious enough to only use the other hand when I really needed a leg up. But we were dying laughing. Like, tears were rolling down my eyes when you're on a date with your wife. They hand you bread and butter and they say, take 1 hand, grab bread, other hand, grab a knife, cut butter and butter your bread. And we both just, okay, we got this. Both arms just knock over the entire table and everything just goes flying. And I'm like, well, there goes that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, trying to beat that game sounds like a nightmare doing multiplayer.
It was so much fun. And if you and Kelly take it, give her the mouse and you just got the controller, you're walking everywhere. It's only 3 hours, plus there's 2 little episode shorts that are roughly 3 minutes long that are just these little single serving interstitial stories. Like, one of them is his kid. He's a doctor in this hospital, and his kids telling a story, and the story is very silly, where it goes, then he was this patient became a unicorn and flew off, and that would happen in the game. And so it's cute, but also you're like taking this person into surgery, then turns out he's a robot, and you hear his kids narrating the whole story.
That's funny. Yeah, I haven't checked in since I beat it way back when, and I just one of the things I love and I want to mention real quick is how the antagonist, the enemy, I believe is a sushi chef.
Yeah, and he's the only one that sees through the facade, and he's chasing you down and trying to prove to other people. And then by the end, your wife and kids find out and you're like, oh, cool.
Right.
And that's it.
Like a loving family would.
Exactly. It's not a big deal. No one's judging. Okay, cool. You've done a lot. You work. You know, we have a house. It's fine.
So the kids have to be adopted, right?
I don't want to get into that. I didn't... The game is too... too wholesome and too positive and feel good to make me want to get into how did he have the kids.
No, I don't want to earn our explicit tag today necessarily. It's just a passing thought.
Well, at one point they mentioned how he shoots ink, but the octopus don't give. I don't think they shoot ink. I think it's squids. I think there's a difference. So I didn't look into that enough, but my friend Steve was like, I don't think that's octopus. I think that's squids. So you can leave some stuff to the imagination and assume, hey, they don't really have everything figured out. It's fine.
Yeah.
It was a good time had by all.
Well, I think originally the game was made by a team of students, if I remember right, too. So we'll give them a pass on animals, species, accuracy here.
They did a great job, and anybody who wants to have a good time with a friend and just sit down and watch some real silly happenings, I plan on kind of doing this again with some other friends and see what they think. Now, Joel, for our backlog blog, you played God of War, the new one.
Yes, so actually this is me closing the loop on something I touched upon a few weeks ago. I finally got done with renting this over and over from the library. I've a few minds of this game, and I'm going to keep it pretty spoiler-free, other than referencing some characters.
Thank you.
So something that took me by surprise a little bit is that the nature of the story is very micro. It's very personally focused. So the prior God of War games, you're giving the loosest thread of narrative about who Kratos is. You're this Spartan who got fooled by the God of War to kill your own family for some reason, then you go on a murderous rampage to kill all the gods as vengeance. And here, it's a very personal story about older Kratos now with his son Atreus, who he had with his wife he met in the Nordic realm and who had died at the start of the game. And then the main goal of the entire game is getting to the highest peak and spreading her ashes from it per her final wish. And while you go through these pretty impressive set pieces throughout the game and have some fairly epic fights throughout at different points, it never really expands too much beyond that in scope. So you're in this new world, and after going through three different games of terrorizing the different gods of Sparta, you kind of expect a similar tear to be happening in a way in this game. And actually, there's a surprising lack of different, unique characters. So you'll run into a witch named Freya, who acts as a helper throughout a lot of different points of the game and gives you keys to different realms of Asgard. And you'll go to the, what is the name of, this is to tell you how much I know about Nordic mythology. In the Thor movies, the Rainbow Bridge, that comes from, what is it called?
Heimdall. Heimdall is the guardian of the Rainbow Bridge.
Right, but there's another name for that bridge and the tool in which they actually engage in it.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about. I'm gonna get back to you on that. Okay. And continue.
But so that's more or less what your traversal through the different realms is using, and it's a tool you open up by getting engaged with Freya, who helps you out at some point. And actually, your first interaction with her is teaching Atreus to shoot a bow and arrow to kill a wild boar, which you find out is actually a magical boar pet of hers. And then she is a continual touchstone between different parts of the story beats.
Okay.
And it sort of acts as this pretty decent through point as you go along each step, and the game sort of teases out at different points that it's going to expand out to a larger world where you reach a world serpent who is this larger than life creature that sort of floats around the entire earth. And then they allude to people like Odin and Thor, and you're thinking, well, we're going to get to these different larger beats, but it actually doesn't stray far beyond. When you first start the game, there is an enemy that approaches you, doesn't really allude to what he wants, but attacks you outright, and you learn that his name is Baldur. And he is sort of this impervious creature that cannot be hurt, and as time goes on in the game, he becomes one of the sort of bigger persistent threats as you go along it. And you'll reach each other's set piece monsters, like there's a pretty substantial beast that you fight fairly early on. That's a pretty impressive thing. But actually, a lot of the combat, and when you hit bosses, they are kind of palette swap type enemies.
Okay. So they kind of replace them. They all look very similar, but just different color shades.
Yeah. So there will be some sections where it'll be a unique enemy type, and then you'll get a unique boss type. But then you'll reach the next realm, and it'll be like the same ogre that has this pillar that he swings around, except maybe he is a different color, and maybe he has like one variant attack on it. And there are different types of basic mob enemies, but I only recall maybe about like 4 or 5 different types of enemies, and then like it would be a light, heavy type of variant that you'd have to change your approach as to how you fight them off.
Okay, but I mean, it does give you different variations on how you have to play, right? You have to adapt and change out your plan.
Right, so there's a light and heavy attack. You can throw your axe. You actually attain a weapon later on that lets you swap between them on the fly if you get really proficient at it. And then also Atreus is there with his bow and arrow, and it for the most part kind of acts as a distraction to the enemies for you to lay hits on. But as he upgrades too, he'll start grabbing on to the enemies and trying to choke them out and giving them weak points where you can hit R3 on your PlayStation 4 controller and it'll do an attack animation that'll be most of the times an insta-kill finisher on them. So it sets up these chains of you being able to work the mobs while Atreus sort of pins one down. You go over and finish them off and then go back to crowd control while you try to whittle down another one.
Very cool. By the way, it was Bifrost.
Bifrost. Yep, that's the name of it.
Yeah, there we go. Okay.
Yep. So I got used to the combat a little bit better and got fairly proficient at it. There were still parts that I got stuck pretty hard on. One of them was actually, and this is a pretty common trope with God of War, but you get to a sequence where you're basically going down an elevator and they're kill rooms. And so you'll reach 2 or 3 different sets where you have to go out and fight different mobs from different sections of the game you'd already been to. And it'll have one of the bosses from there too as sort of a finale for each section. And it's not so much that it was the enemies were too hard, but it was more that they overwhelmed you with so many of them that the crowd control aspect got to be too much. And I remember spending a good couple hours just trying to beat my head against that to get it through.
So it ended up being the trope of throwing more enemies, not different enemies.
Right.
So the more they overwhelm you instead of trying to give you variation on new techniques or new combat styles that you have to figure out.
Right. So, I mean, the combat was satisfying enough. I do wish, and I know it's not unique to God of War, but I do wish there was more variety, or at least more set-piece battles with huge bosses the way that I remember some of the older God of War games being. But it also felt like, through the conclusion of this game, that they're holding a decent amount back for follow-ups.
Which I was surprised they didn't release DLC for this. But I think that it's done, so there isn't actually any DLC for it.
I think another time has passed, especially now, where I imagine if they're working on anything, it's the second one for PlayStation 5, whenever that comes out, as many years down the road. And
I am disappointed, though, to hear that there is just like essentially an elevator sequence where it's floor to floor. I mean, I'm surprised they even stopped at the floor and just had enemies attack you while on the elevator, which is such an old, you know, old shoe to have, right? It's just like, oh, man, this game that does a lot of different things and new techniques. The ability that they went through without camera cuts, you know, that was like a big feature that they had where there's hardly any camera cuts and there's no loading. You just watch from the game from beginning to end, walk from place to place with no loading. They hit it so well, but they throw in elevator tropes in there.
Yeah, I mean, it only happened once from my recollection, and boss rushes are kind of, they're expected, and to their credit, I suppose, it wasn't like they usually is where it's right before the end boss. It's somewhere a few hours back before you get to the end game content of it, but it's still kind of, it took me by surprise for a game in a series that diverges so much from a lot of what the PlayStation 2 and 3 3 ones were, that they pulled back and engaged in that again. It was a little disappointing, but not necessarily my biggest gripe, in spite of having to hit my head against the wall to get through it.
Okay, but I mean, overall, are you glad that you cut the loop on it, you finished it and brought it back about around to the end?
I think it's probably one of the games on PlayStation 4 that, unless you have a sincere dislike for that series in general, that I think it's worth looking into and seeing if it's something that you can give a shot and if it piques your interest. I was never really a huge God of War fan. I played through some of them, but even in the limited context of who that character is, you're able to allude enough to the background of the character to understand the importance of certain story beats, understand why there's sort of a hesitance of Kratos' character to show his true nature to people within that world, and sort of this quiet hesitation in spite of him being this, you know, human beast. And I would say that beyond that, it's just, there's some thoughts I have running through my head about the nature of what kind of feels framed like a redemption arc for Kratos that I don't really feel the narrative of this game really executes. So it feels kind of like, you know how in Breaking Bad, Walter White is kind of seen as this quasi-sympathetic character throughout probably about half of it, right? Where he's kind of this mild-mannered, run-down guy. He gets the cancer diagnosis, and suddenly he's making bad choices, but he justifies to himself that they're for the right reasons, and that he's still a good person, until eventually he decides, no, I'm not a good person, but it's okay, this is what I want to do. Yeah. This seems kind of like that in reverse, where Kratos has done, like, awful shit throughout the series of the game. And through this and through the experience of working with his son in this journey, it's like him trying to soften a little bit, give his son more autonomy, try to show an example of restraint and not doing this stuff. But there's no reconciliation with his past, really. Like, there's a touching glance of him acknowledging what he's done and how it was wrong. But it isn't like he seeks penance for it. It's just sort of a matter-of-factly, this is who I am, this is who I don't want you to be, which is kind of a common trope with a father-son relationship a little bit, but it feels kind of like a half-finished arc.
To me, I like that idea, that classic idea of this is who I am, this is not who you should be, if only because that, like you said, it's so common, and seeing it in someone like Kratos, that it's just basically makes it a unique and universal message that you're always trying to right the sins of the past so that the future doesn't end up that way. And to me, from my understanding of the game, it's him conceding to the fact that, hey, I guess I can't run away, and also my son is probably gonna turn out something like me.
Oh no.
Well, crap. You
know what I mean? I mean, and maybe the moral of the story for this a bit is that there is no redemption, and his character not trying to really reach that is an acknowledgement that his hands are too bloody. There is no washing away the sins of his past, and that the best he can hope for is to get his son in a position where he might make better choices for his own life. But
exactly.
But that's, and I didn't necessarily even mean that as a complaint. It's just sort of something that I've been picking at the back of my brain as I'm following along in the story as it progressed to the end. The only thing I'll even mention beyond that is that the ending felt in some ways kind of anticlimactic. So I guess this is kind of spoilers, but I think you can kind of reach the conclusion that at the end of the story, you reach a point where you're able to spread his mother's ashes on the highest peak.
Yeah.
That's just sort of the nature of the story and the way it works out. That was just the conclusion. And it's kind of something that is, there's built up to the final boss, and it almost feels like the final boss, as epic as it was, you kind of expect something behind that to be an additional final challenge that keeps you from the summit, and that doesn't happen. And it kind of surprised me in that way. There is some good narrative conclusion after that. Some things are sort of tied up. There's some interesting leads at the end that gives you a sense of, like, teasing out where this narrative is going to go, and some broader questions to what's going to happen. But beyond those interesting hooks that really kind of is making me curious about where they go with it next and how much they actually lean into what they are suggesting at the end. It kind of happened abruptly with the end in a way that kind of surprised me.
It's a little disappointing to hear, though I am excited for the future and to see where it goes. So I'm still waiting for this to drop down a little bit cheaper, but I've always kind of wanted to get into this game. I know that I had a little bit of a checkered past. I tried all three of the original ones, and I'm trying to get into that genre of hack and slash, and it's tough for me to penetrate. So I think that this changing up that formula would be something that I'd like to get into. And the way you talk about the story, to me, despite there being some flaws in it, shows that there's some hidden depth there that wasn't there before, and that is something that I will applaud at least trying to flesh out someone that was just this 2D character.
The fact that there's nuance to Kratos as a character at all, I think, is kind of a crowning achievement of this, really.
Well, it's the fact that the way you're talking about it in general is discussing what it means to be a dad and what it means to have all these points in the story where it could have been something different, or have a discussion about what it means to be part of this world, and all that stuff is not necessary. Like, you could try to talk about that with part 1, 2, and 3, and you're not going to get anywhere.
If you ever get around to playing and beating this, I'd be interested in having a more fleshed out conversation about the story itself and the different beats and how they progress the characters along. There's a lot to kind of unpack in all of that.
I definitely will be. So let it drop down to, like, what, 10 bucks?
mid generation of PlayStation 5 and Xbox Infinity or whatever it's called.
Yeah, well, when it goes to, like, PlayStation Classics and it's like, oh, PlayStation 5's coming out in a month. It's like, I can knock out God of War in a month. Now let's jump to listener mail. These are comments and emails from some of our loyal listeners regarding previous episodes and possibly future projects. We have a listener email coming from my brother Phil regarding the Genesis mini console with his own list of some of what he feels like would be good additions. Joel, back me up on some of these and let me know what you think once I go through it. His list was Strider, Phantasy Stars 2 and 3, Kid Chameleon, Chakan the Forever Man, Splatterhouse 2, Splatterhouse 3, NBA Jam, Contra Hardcore, Zombies Ate My Neighbors, that was on my list, Mutant League Football, Mutant League Hockey, Road Rash, that was one of my favorites, Virtual Racing, and Outrun.
I was kind of disappointed in myself that I forgot some of these. I definitely meant to mention NBA Jam and the Mutant League Football and Hockey games when we talked about it. And not only that, but Shinobi 3. Neither of us mentioned that one. That's a required play from that library. And Haunting starring Poltergeist.
What? I don't know that one.
Not at all?
No, I honestly don't. That's a funny one to me. I'm going to highlight that and look into that when we get done with this recording.
Yeah, it's a real weird thing. I won't go into it today.
Overall, he did find some glaring holes. For me, again, Road Rash. I was like, oh my god, Road Rash. I played so much Road Rash.
Oh yeah, that one too.
Yeah. The second piece of listener email comes from one of my closest friends, Alec, which she asked the following. Regarding your Doki Doki Literature Club episode, I thought about this. So the real question for Doki Doki is, what if you back up and restore the characters after the first play? Is that a thing? Will the game continue to play out, or can you delete the AI earlier? This is something that could be testable. A future episode, perhaps?
That's a good question. What do you
think about this one?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
I really don't know, and I kind of wonder if, after the first run-through, if you added the character back in, if it wouldn't just recognize it like it was starting all over from the beginning, and it looped you back to the starting first play. I'm really not sure.
Right. I don't know. I mean, but the thing is that if you remember, the first 2 hours is just the actual dating sim, and I think that you can fast forward that entirely. So if you fast forward through most of it, I feel like it can be a shorter playthrough to get to where you're trying to test out some of these possibilities.
Yeah, I wonder. You feel free to try it out and let me know. I'm not touching that again.
Oh, yeah, no, this would definitely be something of my future projects. I think it'll either be in a week or two that I'll start trying to test out whether we can start saving some of these characters. One thought I did have was I think that those character files may only be for the purpose of those story beats, so that they technically probably don't matter unless, like, they delete the one character and then they show the folder. You go to that folder and that character's gone. Maybe the whole point is just for show. Like, when you're supposed to delete the AI, they're like, okay, now let's go check to see if they deleted the AI. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
But, you know, I'm going to run some tests. I'm going to see how that works. And the third and final listener comment comes from a good friend, Steve, who asks, should I download Apex Legends? Side note, Alex, I can't believe you don't like Altered Beast. Altered Beast is awesome.
No, he's right.
I didn't say didn't like it. That game it's real rough to play if you go back to it. It's really rough.
I'd be curious to play an arcade port of it just to get a sense of how different it was to the Genesis one. But I have no desire to go back to the Genesis one at all.
Yeah. Now, should he download Apex Legends? The price is right.
Right. What's your data cap?
Right, exactly.
I would say yes. I mean, the worst thing you're going to waste is maybe some time and some bandwidth if you have to worry about that. I think that Apex Legends is probably the most polished battle royale game you're going to see. It is very user-friendly if you've played any other first-person shooters, and has a really cool ping system that lets you communicate with your teammates without actually having to have a microphone, with visual cues about what direction you want to go in, or if there's a noteworthy item that you all should scope out.
And I also feel like if you don't know battle royales, pretty simple premise of 100 people drop down an island, and as the game progresses, they will close in parts of the map, so that way you're forced to interact with these other players and kill each other off, and it's last man standing. If you're outside the circle that they're closing off, it'll start damaging you, so you can inherently die unless you go and get into the circle again, which it's pretty easy in the beginning to be on the outside of the circle, take small hits of damage, but the longer the game goes on, the more damage it hurts. I say give it a shot, try a couple rounds. If you're not having a good time, just uninstall from PS4.
And if you're not enjoying that but like first person shooters, then get Titanfall 2. It's cheap. It's one of the best first person shooters for this generation.
That story can't be beat. One of the best of that year, I will say. And it is, again, yeah, like you said, the same creators of Apex Legends. So it was really a fantastic game. And I'm one of the rare people that will defend. I liked Titanfall 1. The way they did the story was different, and it wasn't what I wanted, but I liked that they went and tried it. It's like a radio show. As you're playing these multiplayer matches, they have a kind of dialogue in the background that's telling you the story of what's currently happening as you progress through these matches. But that's the end of our listener mail. Thanks a ton, guys, for the comments and questions. Please keep them coming, and we will make sure to include them in future episodes and think about prospective projects to wrap back around on. That will be it for this week's Super GG Radio. Before you go, you can find us on Twitter at Super GG Radio and twitch.tv/SuperGGRadio, where I have streaming plans of possibly a husband and wife stream, some of Octodad's Deadliest Catch, make my wife play some more of that, and possibly have her interact with me while I play Besieged or Totally Accurate Battle Simulator. Maybe getting some Monster Hunter World after that big 4K update hit. How about you, Joel? You got that Elgato streaming box I sent you in the mail. You going to put that thing to good use?
Yeah. So I was thinking about, I've got this shiny new PlayStation Classic that I've been tinkering around with, and maybe once I get done with my tinkering, we'll take some choices to give a go. I've got a Super Nintendo Classic and an NES Classic that I've got a nice healthy list of games also.
That'd be pretty good. It'd be a lot of fun. I'd watch. If you'd like to reach us with questions or input, our email address is superggradio@gmail.com, and provide a review on iTunes or the podcast app of your choice. Thanks for listening. Good game, Joel.
Good game.
That's 4031.
Yes, Lolocaust.
I like that name.
I like it too. It's just I wouldn't feel comfortable using it now.
Your wife is judging you so hard.
Well, I mean, she doesn't need a reason to. I'm giving her ammo. I love you.
Good stuff all around.